The Gemara in Yuma, Daf Ayin Hay, says that when the mun used to fall down, it didn't fall down in the same place for everybody. For the tzaddikim, it fell right at the entrance to their house. For Beinanim, a little bit further, and for Asharim, a lot further from their home. Someone asked of Aaron Yehuda Leib Steinman, and also separately of Chaim Kanievsky, so then why didn't everyone just look to see where did the mun fall by the tent of Korach, where did the mun fall by the tent of Moshe Rabbeinu, and figure out from there who was right and who was wrong? And both of Chaim and of Aaron Yehuda Leib answered the same answer, but separately. It wouldn't have helped, because if Korach and his people would have seen that the mun fell far away from his house, he would have explained that and said, it's only because I'm not rebelling strong enough. That's what I'm doing wrong. I should be fighting Moshe more powerfully. It's because I'm acting too humbly and letting this slide too much. Somebody deeply involved in machlokes and jealousy can't see straight, and everything just fits into the picture that they already have. And while that answer is correct, Reb Chaim says you don't really need to come on to it, because the Shevet and Musar quotes a midrash that on the day of the machlokes with Korach, mun didn't fall for the Jewish people, and therefore there wouldn't have been a way to test who is right and wrong by looking at the mun. The Shevet and Musar says we see from this that if the mun kept on falling even after Chayta Egel, but it was only now when there was this internal fighting within the Jewish people, that's when the mun didn't fall. From this we really see the destructive nature of machlokes and how hated it is by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Shla writes that one machlokes could ward off 100 parnassas. Fighting within Klai Yisrael and Sinas Chinam is dangerous for people's parnassa. And we see how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu dislikes machlokes, especially when it comes to Dasan and Aviram. Because Dasan and Aviram are long-time Rishon already. We've been hearing about them since the beginning of Sefer Shmos. They were the ones that told on Moshe Rabbeinu to Paro that Moshe killed the Mitzri and buried him under the ground. They were the ones that were fighting with each other that Moshe Rabbeinu said, Rasha lama taka re'echa. They were the ones that came and were upset with Moshe and Aaron when they came out of Paro's palace in Shmos Perek. Hey, Pasukov. Targum Yonatan says in Perek Yudalit of Shmos, Dasan and Aviram didn't even leave with Klai Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim. They actually chased after them together with Paro. Dasan and Aviram were the ones that saved their mun towards the next day, even though Kadosh Baruch Hu had said not to. Chutzpedik. But all of these years, they didn't die. Why didn't they die during Makas Choshech when all the other Rishayim in Klai Yisrael secretly passed away in a way the Egyptians wouldn't notice? Why weren't they part of the 4/5 of Klai Yisrael that didn't get to leave Mitzrayim? And the Maral Diskin explains that that's because of the Midrash that says that Dasan and Aviram were part of the Shotrim, the police officers of Klai Yisrael, that were appointed by the Egyptian oppressors to beat the Jews when they wouldn't finish their quota of bricks. And the Shotrim of Klai Yisrael, in an act of unbelievable Avas Yisrael, instead of giving over the names of the Jews that didn't fill their quota, and instead of they themselves beating those Jews, they would take the beatings from the Egyptian oppressors and would be wounded and get welts and bruises all over their body, taking the blows on behalf of the Jewish people. This schus that Dasan and Aviram had to save Jews from being beaten and to take the blows themselves served to protect them in all these years that they were Zocha to join Klai Yisrael and partake of all the miracles that Klai Yisrael witnessed when leaving Mitzrayim, when traveling in the Midbar. But there was one thing that their schus couldn't protect them from. Once they got involved in machlokes, in fighting and arguments, then they were done. Their schus wasn't enough to protect them for that. I was thinking that maybe, and I didn't see this anywhere, when Dasan and Aviram were swallowed up by the earth, that was really the punishment Migida Keneged Migida that was waiting for them since the beginning of Sefer Shmos when they told on Moshe Rabbeinu for burying the Egyptian under the ground. They were also going to now be buried under the ground. But that punishment was held off for them until their merit wasn't able to protect them anymore. And what was the Migida Keneged Migida aspect behind the Ketores test with the 250 Nisiei Ha'eda that wanted to be Kohanim Gedolim? Why were they specifically tested through the use of Ketores? And Reb Chaim Kanievsky suggests that perhaps this was in response to his claims. In Bamidbar Rabbah, Korah came with the claim, a talis whose beged is fully made out of tcheles shouldn't need tzitzis strings. A house which is filled with sfarim shouldn't need a mezuzah. What's the logic behind what Korach is saying? He's saying that if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is happy with there being one Kohen Gadol, Kava Chomer he'd be happy with 250 Kohanim Gadolim. A lot of a good thing is even better. Korach's claims were knocked down with the Ketores test. Now, the usual shear for Ketores is pras b'shacharis upras b'narbayim. A chotzi mana, half of an amount in the morning and a half in the afternoon. It was a very small amount of ketores that was necessary to put on the mizbeach. And Korach, according to your logic, it should be that if 250 people fill up pans filled with ketores, that should kal v'chomer, according to your kal v'chomer, be even better, and it should bring even more bracha upon the people. The tragic ending of those 250 people answered the Taina and showed that no, the Ratzon Hashem is to do exactly the Shir Hashem says, not more and not less. But in this Parsha, we could also learn some beautiful midos. At the end of Revi'i, there's a pasuk that doesn't seem to be teaching or adding anything. It says, Vayashav Aaron al Moshe, al Pesach Oam Moed, Vamagefa Netzara, and Aaron returned to Moshe, to the entrance of Oam Moed, and the plague stopped. Now, we already know from a few psukim earlier that the plague stopped. It already said, V'te'atzar ha-magefa, the magefa stopped. So, this pasuk isn't being mechadish to us that the plague stopped. Why do we need to know that Aaron returned to Moshe? And why did he return to Moshe? And why is the pasuk saying again that the plague stopped? And the Moshe of Zakenim, and also there's a Tosas Arush answer, that because Moshe had just sent Aaron to stop the plague through the use of the Ketores. So Aaron needs to go back and report to Moshe Rabbeinu, mission accomplished, it worked, the plague stopped. And adds the Moshe of Zakenim, this is not like what people often do, that they'll go to the Rav or the Tzaddik for a bracha, or with a shayla to ask for advice, to daven for them, but they don't go back to the Rav to say what happened at the end of the day. And there's a lack of a karas atov in that. To only go to the Tzaddikim with our problems, and not to go back and tell them that everything worked out. To ask your Rebbe for advice, and then not to go tell him how it all worked out at the end, there's a lack of a karas atov in that. It's insensitive. The Chazon Ish used to be very makbid on this. He would be frustrated when people would only express their pains and not come back and tell him that everything worked out. And that's what this pasuk is coming to show, proper Derech Eretz. It says, V'yashav Aaron Moshe, a Pesach O'al Moed, why? V'amagefa Netzara, to let Moshe know that the plague stopped. What you sent me to do worked out. Another beautiful sensitivity is seen in the beginning of Perek Yud Zayin, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe to send Elazar, Aaron HaKohen's son, to come clean up the pans after the Ketores test that killed 250 Nisiei HaEdah. Asks the Or HaChaim, why suddenly was Aaron HaKohen's son the one that was sent? Why not just send Aaron HaKohen himself? And answers the Or HaChaim that since the people died because of Aaron, because they coveted Aaron's position, then it would be kind of like in your face if Aaron would then go and be the one to collect all those unsuccessful pans of Ketores. So in order not to shove it in their face, even though they were dead already, still, it wasn't appropriate that Aaron should be the one to do the job, and that's why Elazar, his son, was sent in his place.